Hi everyone, I'm Penny and I am an alcoholic. Now I'm really disappointed I brought this Diet Coke to have during the meeting, and it's a joke in my family that I'm still a pig drinker because I can finish off a can of Coke in 4 swallows, and I call those sips. My family doesn't think, they won't let me sip anything of theirs because I'm such a pig drinker. Some things never change. Thanks. So, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. So last week I shared how to take an inventory, mostly by focusing on the process through the resentments and fears. And I completely flaked out last week and did not share that process through our sexual harms or harms done to others, but it's pretty much the same process. And I thought I'd read a little bit from the big book. As you can tell, this is my favorite basic text of all the literature that we have in the program. I like to keep it simple whenever possible, so I pretty much just rely upon this book. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we are going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half-truth. It depends on us and on our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have an honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we will have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. If we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see these terrible destructiveness, to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill towards all men, even our enemies, though we look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct, and we are willing to straighten out the past if we can. So it is difficult to share, at least it was for me at some level, the exact nature of my wrongs. I lived a life of blaming others or being the victim. To come to terms that I many times was the cause of my own crappy life was a large bite of humble pie. Step 5 allowed me to learn of humility, fearlessness, and honesty. Another book that I like to read that I've been quoting is James 5:16 says, "Confess your sins to one another that you may be healed." And isn't it wonderful that the 12 steps offers this healing by admitting our faults to another human being? And isn't it wonderful once we get right with others, we get right with God? And when I'm right with God and others, I get right with myself. So, as many of you, I was living a double life. I was lying to cover my actions, mostly because I was mortified by my own behavior. I wanted everyone to think I was something I was not. Mostly, I wanted to be loved and accepted. But my character defects far outweighed my knowledge of how to foster healthy relationships, so I had a lot of unhealthy relationships. My selfishness escalated when I pushed God out of my life, leaving me grasping for anything that would bring me instant gratification. Fear ruled when blackouts left me with a sense of uneasiness and remembering the night before with shame and guilt. So I really don't recall having any true, honest interactions with anyone until I got sober. My natural instincts were out of whack because of the consequences of my drinking, whether it was my finances, my ambitions, or my personal relations. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about, you know, when you're working the four-step and some examples of where my natural instincts were out of balance. And then in the guide that I use, it talks a little bit about name my injuries. How did I feel as though I was injured? And I kind of categorized them, and you know, first would be my parents. I lied to them often, and I pretended I was a good daughter, and you know, that impacted my self-esteem, my ambitions, and my relationships. And I talk a lot, often, if I'm asked to lead, about the tug of war that I was experiencing in my life. I wanted to be a good daughter. I wanted to be a good student. I mean, I remember in school, you know, there were some people I was hanging around with when I was a teenager that they were doing all kinds of things that I just really felt uncomfortable about doing, but I was accepted in that crew, in that gang, because they partied. I mean, I was in a position where I really could, I went to a country school, my dad worked second shift, we had one car and he had it, and so I was pretty much go to school and come home, and as a teenager, you know, sometimes I'd do a sleepover or whatever, but you know, these people I was hanging out with, I guess I was going with that in that I didn't do any activities. You know, I wasn't involved in band or any sports or, you know, all of that was above me. You know, I wasn't academically, you know, in that sphere either. And, you know, so the people that accepted me readily were the people that partied. So I hung out with them. But that tug of war was such that, you know, like vandalizing the girls' room or, you know, stealing money or whatever. All of those things just rubbed me the wrong way. But yet I wanted to be a part of. You know, my natural instinct was that I wanted to have a personal relationship. I wanted to be liked, you know. And so I did that, but it early on in my drinking, there was a lot of angst within me about the things that I was engaged. I knew right from wrong, but I didn't know how to get to the right side and party. So another group of people that were impacted was my sister and my brother and other family members. Pretty much what I did around them when I was drinking is I ignored or tried to hide my true self, and I would say that my true self was that of alcoholic thinking and alcoholic drinking and all the other things that I was doing. So, you know, I kind of presented, as they talk about in the big book, that actor, you know, a false self, and I paraded around as though I was without fault. I just kind of like brushed over any topics about, well, where were you last weekend, and things like that. I just kind of tried to ignore that, and I lied a lot. I did a lot of lying. with my husband, you know, I abused and dishonored him. I mean, quite honestly, my entire marriage was a farce. You know, Eric and I started dating very early. He was 15, I was 16, and we were dating. Really, it wasn't dating. We didn't go on a date until we got sober. And we were married for 4 years, and we finally went on a date. What we did was we partied, but my father was pressuring, if you will, like, what are you doing dating my daughter, and you haven't even asked her hand in marriage, you know? Eric didn't propose to me, and I didn't propose to him. We just decided to get daddy off our backs, and we got married. And really what we did is we planned a big party is what we did. That's all it was. I mean, that was top of the list. How are we going to have this reception, and where are we going to go on our honeymoon and drink? And that's exactly how that all played out. But so I'm not saying that it was a bad match, okay? I mean, it was, but my goodness, you know, God was involved in that because it's worked out wonderfully. But I'm very fortunate in that area too, and we both worked really hard to make sure that, you know, we stayed together. It was a commitment. So, you know, in that relationship, the things, my natural instincts that were being impacted was my sexual relationships, my security. I mean, we broke every marriage vow that is breakable in that relationship. We did not conduct ourselves in any way as two married people. My employer, I took advantage of my employers. And I definitely lied to them, and my natural instincts for security and self-esteem and ambitions, the way that played out is I was always lying about why I was sick. I mean, I didn't call in and say, hey, I'm hungover, I'm not coming. I mean, I would love to know what it is I called in, what type of excuses. And, you know, it's funny how things turn around. You know, later on in my career, I had the opportunity, I guess. I was in a supervisory position, and there was this young woman named Marie, and Marie was one of us. I'm going to take her inventory. And oh my gosh, some of the reasons that she would call, my favorite was that I can't come in today. I was cleaning the shower and the cleaning product made me nauseous. It's like, oh my goodness. So I can only imagine what kind of excuses I was, you know, putting out there. And the other thing is that I had severe hangovers. It really didn't matter a whole lot how much I drank, but when I drank, I physically got sick. It's probably because I was poisoning myself, you know. So that really interferes with your ability to get work done. And so, I mean, there would be times I drove 25 miles to get into work. I drive all the way into work, and I get there, and, you know, I was working on the computer, and it's really hard to work on your computer when you feel like vomiting all over the place, you know? I really had to gauge which days I was going to go out, and I tried so hard to make that Friday nights, but we all know how that works, you know? Then it becomes Thursday night, Wednesday night, Monday you're getting over Sunday, and oh. So the other group of people I thought of were like counselors. You know, I thought I sought outside help because of that terrible husband I had. And, you know, what happened in those sessions mostly when I was thinking about it this past week is I played the victim. I was totally incapable of being 100% honest about what was going on. I only gave half the story, and it was not my story. It was what everything that had been done to me. You know, so I look at that as far as a natural instinct was my self-esteem. You know, I wanted to build myself up and justify these terrible things and come out of that with a reason and a right to drink. If your life was like mine, type of thinking. So the fifth step was my first go at sharing the reality of my drinking and my shortcomings in a way that was honest. And although I was apprehensive, I have to say fearless, which is what we're asked to do, is to be fearless. So last week, oh my goodness, I'm just going to be straight up honest. Last week, and I don't even know who it was, somebody over in that, it might have been you with the black hat. Kevin asked about did anybody do their fifth step with somebody other than their sponsor? Yeah, a new volunteer. Well, I did my first fifth step with someone other than my sponsor. Yeah. So I forgot. and you know, what's going on for me is I had a health issue, and I, you know, there's a lot of things I don't remember. You know, pre-AA and while in AA, and my mind's going, all right? I'm a crispy critter up here. I don't know exactly what is all going on, but it's definitely been an issue, and I'm pretty good about keeping lists and making sure that I don't reveal that little dirty secret. But it's troublesome for me to remember a lot of things. And that's when I'm with Eric, he's my reminder. He fills in all the blanks for me. And I haven't really seen him this week. And it was like, well, why didn't I do my fist up with my first sponsor? I remember the reason why I chose not to do it. And that was is early on, and I was going to ask him about the dates. Like, I know it was within my first year when I did my first four step, and we went to York, PA to the conference, and there was somebody there, I don't remember her name, but I just said, I'm coming back next year, I'm going to do this fifth step with you. So I held on to my fourth an entire year until that conference rolled around. Right? And the only thing I can think of why I chose to do that was that my initial sponsor just wasn't strong in the steps. You know, she was great about telephone calls and going to meetings and the slogans and all that. Now, today, that is not the way she is, but back then she was. I mean, I love her dearly. But I think that's kind of like what was going on, and I totally forgot about that last week, you know? So pretty much from what I can recall, I wasn't really being sponsored through the steps. And I do know that, you know, I kind of embarked upon them by myself. I did a lot of big book meetings. I went to a couple conferences that was focused on the steps. So I pretty much got through all that. But I do recall, after doing my fifth, that I finally came to terms with one of the biggest lies. And for me, was the fact that I wasn't all that in a bag of chips. And that was a big thing for me because I just could not accept that I did these horrific things, the horrific things in my eyes. And so I just kind of ignored that, and the fifth step really drew that out. It's like it was my opportunity to share what was going on for real in my life. And I came to a place of being able to say, you know, you got these good qualities and you got these not so good qualities. And it was a wholeness, a feeling of, yep, this is who I am. It was accepting myself. And you know, I was thinking about how, you know, we talk about admitting that we're alcoholic. And for me, the fifth step was, you know, accepting what I had written down in the fourth, like, yep, that's what I did. You know, what are you going to do about it? And, you know, we move forward after that. At least I did. I don't even recall working step in 6 and 7. I'm sure I did. I remember doing my amends, and I remember doing steps 10 through 12. But that time of my recovery is just kind of gone. So I don't remember if that person that I did my fifth step with, if she said, you know, to carve out that hour that the big book suggests afterwards. So anyways, there you have it. My big, dark, ugly secret. So in the end, I knew I didn't want to stay the person I was, and I was glad to finally admit this, and from there move forward and evolve into the person I knew that God wanted me to become. That was so paramount in my journey. So I thought I'd talk a little bit now as a sponsor and taking someone's fifth step, what that's like for me. So, you know, I've heard it before and I've experienced, I really do feel as though it's an honor to be used by God in this way. I mean, I'm listening to the most private details of a woman's life and to guide her in accepting herself as I learned to accept myself, good, bad, and ugly, and to be at peace with God. I think that's just so great. A little bit about the setup. I've done very few fifth steps outside of my home, so I'm very fortunate that that has worked out. So I have this couch that's in my great room, and I got a box of tissues, and I get my pad and my pen, because y'all know I don't remember all so well. And Bella. Bella is my dog, and she has been through many fist steps with the ladies that come to my home. And I kind of, you know, once we say hello and all that, I like to open up with a prayer, and I just pray for that sponsee, and I also read the beginning of chapter 6 into action, pages 72 through 73, and it kind of just emphasizes why it's so important to, you know, to do the fifth step, you know, that, hey, if you don't do this, this is a key moment, and if you skip this, there's a good chance. You know, I was very lucky running around with that four step for a year. You know, once, you know, you do the four step, it's so crucial, I know today, to get rid of that, to move forward and to deal with all of those things. So, you know, my sponsee will have her four step with her. I usually use a guide, or they can kind of map it out like it is in the book with the columns, and I instruct her to share left to right just as she wrote it down, and as she reads what she wrote, we talk about it. It's conversational, and if necessary, I'll ask for clarification, and if she's not seeing something, I ask probing questions. Or I might share some of my own experiences if I think it might help her be at ease and to understand the desired outcome, which is to see our part in it, to see what natural instincts were, you know, out of whack, if you will. So we move through each category. I like to start with resentment because I think they're the easiest, fear, sexual harms, and then harms other than sexual. Then after each section, we determine together if an amends is required. Sometimes, you know, people that are on that resentment list or on the fears list, you know, we come to the conclusion that there's no need to make an amends in certain situations. And then we try to categorize those amends. There's the easy ones, which are usually close family, you know, mom, dad, brother, sister, and then harder amends to make. And then there's that final category, like, there's no way I'm making an amends. So that's like the need to pray for willingness category. So, and I try to, you know, remind that sponsee over the next couple months, you know, how you doing with the amends. And, you know, we'll be getting into that a little bit later. But to end our time together, I then share that she spend an hour and read page 75. And page 75, I thought I'd read that real quick, just a section of that, about the returning home. So returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall stand, shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly placed? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar out of sand? And then I ask the sponsee if they're comfortable with taking 6 and 7 in that hour's time. And I also, you know, have them read page 76, which talks about steps 6 and 7. And then pretty much sometimes that day, always the next day, I like to follow up and just make sure that there's no questions. How did that hour turn out? And 6 and 7, were they able to take that? And then any, you know, how is she feeling emotionally and spiritually after that experience? So that is all I have tonight. Yeah, buzzing through it.
And now we have a question and answer period. Does anybody have any questions?
I'm not alcoholic. I was just wondering if you feel comfortable going through five, are you willing to go through six and seven?
No.
Gosh, already gone.
Gone to the dogs.
I can only ask three questions, I guess. Thank you. As always, thank you very much for doing this. It's much harder. It's much harder to do than it is to than anything. But when you're talking about your fist up, you did a couple of questions that I had. One was, you remembered that you didn't do it with your sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of curious how that went, number one. And then when you've done it with people and it tells you to go back and spend that hour, mm-hmm. and go over your work and make sure that it's thorough, mm-hmm. has, I know for myself, when I did that, I went, oops. I only forgot one of the biggest things, you know, that selective forgetfulness that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I worked on my four-step for close to a year also, and forgot probably the second most important thing in there. So when it says to go back and re-examine that, the feeling that I got was, I've heard other people say that, oh, you know, I got this sense of relief. I got a sense of terror because I didn't do it right.
Mm.
And I was, you know, intense on doing it right. And I called my sponsor and said, I need to talk to you ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
He said, slow down. And made me wait a couple of days, and I just squirmed like a fish out of the water and just was totally uncomfortable. And wondered if you've had a similar experience with somebody, either you sponsored or when you did it yourself. Was there something that, you know, pops up, but it popped up immediately for me? I just wondered if you had that experience.
No, I don't recall that with my first, with any fist step. I think that I must have done it very thoroughly. I'm kind of a type A personality. and I really took it seriously. I took the four steps seriously. And, you know, I guess I'm from the line of thought that whatever isn't dealt with in the fourth and fifth step, we have the other steps to cover that. So I always kind of fell back on that, realizing that every day I can take a 10th step and make it right at that moment. And the person that I did my... I have a picture of her and I. We both have pink t-shirts on. Do you know her name? Do you remember her name? Short blonde hair. I think she must have had some time. Or I don't know why I made that. I just don't know. But I do remember walking outside of the building. It was really hot. And I was totally relieved. And I don't know if it was because I had waited so long, the anticipation, or I think it was probably more of a sense that, oh my gosh, I'm really doing these 12 steps. And I have found in sponsoring others, and I think it was probably my first experience, when you're working those columns and you get to the last column, it's like, oh my gosh, I have wasted all of this energy on this resentment, say for instance, and it was me. And so everything kind of fell away while I was doing the fourth step. To me, the fifth step was just a formality almost, because I figured it out. I figured out during my fourth step that, yeah, you're a schmuck, and just because you stop drinking doesn't mean that things are going to magically get better. So I don't know if that answers your questions or not, but...
So when you do somebody's fifth step, you look for their resentments, their fears, and their sexual behaviors, and then do you look like for the patterns? You know, it may be
the patterns. Yes, I always talk about, like, you're going to probably find two or three things that pop up over and over, and it's like that's your golden nugget. That's what you need to remember the next time something arises. It's like, oh wait, am I being fearful again? Am I being selfish? Because I think for as many as I've done, which isn't a ton, there just seems to be a reoccurring theme with us, and we'll have a spattering of all of them. And for me, you know, it was there was a lot of fear, but for me, it was mostly selfishness and self-centeredness. Those were the things that kept cropping up for me, but it seems to be very common fear, because it can look a lot of different ways.
So not to get ahead of ourselves with 6 and 7, but when you do a fifth step with somebody and you recognize those patterns, mm-hmm. first of all, do you have them burn their fourth step?
Mm, no.
Okay, I've heard that before.
Yeah, I've heard that too. No, I'm not, because that is where we get our amends list.
Right.
And I pretty much kind of do that because of my mind. So when it comes time that we're talking about making the amends list and doing the ninth step, I have my own list because we've kind of arrived at that together, so I can kind of keep, especially when you're sponsoring 7 or 8 women and you got 2 or 3 doing it, I get confused.
Yeah, I have them.
I tell them, though, I always tell my sponsors, you have no worries about me ever sharing any of your fifth step, because I just don't remember. You know, it's just... No, she's been very quiet so far.
So when you see these patterns in the fifth step, now does that like carry over for you when they do their 6th and their 7th step? Is that kind of what you...
You know, I can't wait to start working on the 6 and 7, because that to me was the hardest because of the frustration. And I guess I kind of lump those patterns into doing the personal inventory and step 11, which is the continued relationship with, you know, our higher power. And being able to isolate those things, I can't answer that, because I need to really delve into 6 and 7 and next week.
Okay, that'll be good. Yeah. Something to look forward to.
There's a lot of questions.
Anybody else? That's it.
All right.
I give you the majority of the money.